has gone on a trip to the moon, and she won't be back too soon. She doesn't write me and I can't sleep. All I hear from her is, my baby's up in a rocket machine. Since she left, she ain't been seen. She doesn't call me and I can't sleep. All I hear from her is, I wonder if means I miss you, or maybe means I want to kiss you. I'm hoping that means I love you, and she's coming down to earth again. My baby's high in the stratosphere, I'm so low cause I'm down here. My love for her is gonna keep till she comes back and whispers. I wonder if means I miss you, and maybe means I want to kiss you. I'm hoping that means I love you, and she's coming down the earth again. My baby's fooling around with a satellite, now you know that that ain't right. My love for her is gonna keep till she comes back and whispers. My baby's fooling around with some space cat, that chick don't know where she's at. She better come on down here to earth and groove. I ain't gonna move. Oh, lay that sound on me, honey.
Mean as I am. Oh dear, it's is it working? Yes. It's Radio Misterioso here on killradio.org, and we're back with Ralph Kuhn and Walter Bosley, talking about all kinds of weird stuff. During the break there, we were talking about the space program. Earlier, we were talking about the space program and how some guy had gone up to Buzz Aldrin and said he never went to the moon, and that was a hoax, and Aldrin punched him in the mouth or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's the story we heard today.
And but after the guy left, Walt said, well, maybe he's irritated because he might know that he wasn't the first person on the moon.
Yeah, right. That's what we were
hooking into the idea.
Maybe he's just irritated.
Huh?
Maybe he's just irritated. Yeah, at
he
people
might
like that.
Maybe the guy was just kind of an asshole and in his face. And you know, good for him. We've not to go off on a long digression, but you know, we've gotten into a society where you know, genuine, sincere. You know, some guys just need their ass kicked once in a while. And we've gotten in a society where, you know, some guy comes up and provokes you, pushes you around, threatens you, you clock him, and you go to jail, you get sued? What the hell kind of society is that? That's one of my rants.
What was the astronaut that hit him? What was
Buzz Aldrin.
Did something happen to him legally because of the assault?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, if it was a, like, you know, in agent parlance, when you shoot somebody and it's a good shoot, I mean, if it was a good punch where the guy deserved it, I hope nothing happened to him, but, you know, if it was an overreaction to a combat, that's called assault.
What since happened to the fellow that got punched?
I don't know.
Because he was making a radio documentary about...
Really? Okay. See, you... Sounds like you know more details than we do.
He was on some radio show the night that it happened. The day that... the night that it happened.
Yeah.
Or the day that it happened, that night he was on a radio show in L.A. Some AM talk show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, I only listened for a couple minutes and then hung up.
Well, if anybody knows who that is, call in.
Yeah, who has the details?
252-0998.
He had been making some sort of documentary, I think a video documentary about, I don't know. I don't know if it was about UFOs. I don't know what it was about.
Probably about never going to the moon.
That's it.
There's the book called, what's it called? Dark Moon.
Dark Moon, yes.
Very good book about the NASA photos being funny. And the funny thing is, like Dave pointed out several times and tried to point out to this individual, I will try to say with respect, who was there today, that the book never claims we did not go to the moon. The book simply tries to point out there's some funny business about our trips to the moon, which I have embraced that theory. The individual today seemed to be more interested in everybody hearing that he was going to lunch with Buzz Aldrin than he was really discussing, you know, what was on the book. So, you know.
Oh, whatever. By the way, the three songs were When You See Those Flying Saucers by the Buchanan Brothers, Attack El Robot Attack by Calexico, and then Beep Beep by Louis Prima, if you want to go look for those on the net. Anyway, let's go ahead with space the discussion program. About the space program and getting to it hooks in earlier with what we were saying about the technology being 5, 10, 20, whatever years ahead of.
You want the wacky theory now?
Well, nothing on this show is wacky. In fact, okay. if it's that wacky, then, you know, I'd love somebody to call in and say, you're full of crap because.
Yes, exactly.
Like Ralph has been doing.
Yeah.
He hasn't been saying, you're full of crap. He's just been saying, well, how do you know this?
Right. And I have unsuccessfully been able to answer your how do you know.
I mean, Greg, you were talking about how when you were a kid, you got into Bigfoot and ghosts. I mean, I think that's kind of natural for a lot of people, and I was too, just because the
mystery. Yeah, but to stay with it.
The mystery is, the mystery is interesting, you know, and it's.
Sure.
It's, I don't know.
Even if we find out what all this stuff is, there's still going to be mysteries.
Yeah. Well,
and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to have a discussion with somebody like Walter. It's like, it's almost like when, you know, you're talking about should we have gone to war with whatever, and it's like somebody works for the government, and they're like, well, there's things you don't know. And it's like, well,
I know,
well okay,
sound,
well,
I know.
Okay.
I understand, yeah.
Well, how can
you're right, and that how that sounds is, you're absolutely right.
I mean, how can I have a discussion with them? There's some things you don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, well. Okay.
Well, that's how the UFO community reacts. Like, if you're not going to tell me anything, then you're full of shit.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't trust anything you say.
And what they forget is...
I appreciate you have a mentor, Walter, but, you know...
I also have my signature on some paper that, honestly, in a very legal, real sense, would keep me from saying certain things. But like I said, the things that I can't talk about really pertain mostly to counterintelligence matters. And, you know, some actual, real, you know, technology that... The technology I'm talking about, I can't talk about, doesn't explain UFOs. It just, you know, I'm just mentioning that, you know, those particular things I'm not going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But the space program thing, you know, I will say, you know, this is my theory based on, you know, all the stuff that's in my head, things I've been told, things I've seen, things I've read, most of it, you know, open source that you can look at yourself and see, you know, and I don't think I'm the first guy to come to the conclusion, but for me, it's a fairly recent conclusion that's a culmination of, you know, all the things I've seen in our lifetime and things I've been told. You know,
right.
And that
Which
is that the Apollo 11, I personally do not believe that Apollo 11 was the first time the United States landed men on the moon and returned them home safely. I do not believe that.
And why not?
And why not? Because having been in the U.S. Air Force, having come from, you know, two people in my family being in the Air Force, being a citizen of the U.S. and knowing how, you know, seeing even on the public level how things work, for instance, when they tell you that the F such and such is the most advanced aircraft in the skies, you can bet money that what they've got that they're not telling you about is at least 20 years advanced technologically. For instance, the SR-71. In the 80s, I heard people younger than myself talking about the SR-71. People actually my age or older, like it was something new and had just come out. Well, first of all, I remember having a plastic toy of the SR-71 in 1967 when I was real little, and my dad told me they had that in the 50s.
50s, yeah.
Yeah. And yet, people in the 80s were talking
about
this.
Okay, well, I get the idea that you know, if a bit of technology comes out from the U.S. government, you can almost, what you're saying,
yeah.
Walter, is that it's 10 years old or whatever. It's happened.
What they secretly have is more advanced.
Okay, why not, if Kennedy's big thing was, you know, getting to the moon by the end of the 60s, why not say, okay, if we did it in 63, why keep it a secret?
Why keep it a secret? that goes back to other theories of that involve political conspiracies, financial conspiracies, you know, that's a whole other ball of wax, but basically because there is a power base because of this, and there are people who have proposed that the whole moon race was a big, you know, Cold War show, which I would say is very likely true.
So when did we? When did they land on the moon?
Well, that gets into a theory. I think it's possible that we started attempting it right after World War II. I think we
started attempting to get to the moon.
Yes. Yeah, going into space, you know, shooting for the moon. I have read some things. You know, these are, you know, books that are out there, various books, at which I can later get the titles for you if you insist. That the landing was probably accomplished sometime in the early to mid 60s. It could be as late as the mid to late 60s, because we put our show on in 1969.
All right, so if you're the dude that got there first, wouldn't you be out, if you were out there, wouldn't you want to bring attention to yourself?
Maybe not.
Why?
For the same reason Walter was doing this.
There are people who do secret things that, honestly, believe it or not, their reward is what they've done. And the compensation they receive.
How could you compartmentalize that? Somebody was stepped on the ground of the moon. First.
Let me ask you, how many people have been on the moon?
I mean, I don't know. Nine?
That we're aware of, maybe a dozen?
Yeah.
That we're aware, and who did they work for?
United States government.
The United States government.
Okay,
and they're all, except for Armstrong that comes to mind, and maybe a couple others, they were all military guys. Pretty committed to duty, you know.
Okay.
And they're part of the team. And, the other guys who went are all most likely, you know, government employees of one ilk or another. I'm saying perhaps there is some aspect to the existence of this, the things of the space program we in the public don't know about. Maybe there is some aspect that convinces these guys why it's important for them not to talk about it. I'm not saying I know that. I'm saying there might be something that's like, wow, you're right. Under other circumstances, I want to tell everybody about this. But you know what? There's a reason, very good reason why.
And what kind of people do you think they would bring into that kind of program? Not somebody that has an ego gratification of telling everybody else what they did.
Yeah.
Not everybody is like that. And the other thing that I thought Walter pointed out, you know, because all this is what we're talking about right now sounds reasonable. The only thing in connection with what he was talking about earlier about technology being ahead, and also as a space race thing, and as a contest to get to the moon and promote.
Let's make sure we can get there.
If you screw it up, you're going to look really bad.
Exactly.
So why not do it right once or twice?
Yeah.
And then when you do it, when everybody sees it, it's like rehearsal.
Make sure you
don't go
out
on stage and screw
it
up, not knowing what you're doing.
And who's to say? Who's to say that Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins weren't the first ones to do it? But in an earlier time. What I'm saying is the Apollo 11 landing, I do not believe was the first manned moon landing.
But don't enough countries and governments around the world have satellite that would have seen something go up in
1962?
Back then, no.
No? Okay.
No. There was just us and Russia, and we beat them, I'm doing the quote thing, in the space race. There are some theories out there that the Russians did land, but their guys died, which then showed up in a movie called Countdown with James Caan in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. In the end of that film, the Apollo astronauts land, and they see the Russian lander there and the dead Soviet astronauts. That's the end of that movie. Countdown, check it out.
They came out in 69, the movie?
Yeah, 69, 70, something like that, yeah.
Oh, really?
Check it out.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Duvall is in it. Robert Duvall and James Caan are astronauts. Yeah, I saw this on like Showtime 12 years ago.
Astronauts.
I never even knew it existed. And then
At least it wasn't...
We have eight.
Yeah. At least it wasn't Ed Harris. He wasn't old enough then.
But you know what? I'm not saying I'm the first guy to come up with this theory. I'm saying I think it's possible. Let's take Roswell, for instance. It is possible that Roswell was not an alien crash, and the reason for the secrecy was it was America's first attempt at using a spacecraft to launch men into space, and it didn't work. It went wrong. They crashed. They retrieved it because it was technology, perhaps, that the Germans had advanced and we had seized after World War II.
Well, that's
the
where they were all working.
Oh, and they were into stuff that was amazing technologically.
And if everybody wants to think it's the little green men from outer space, and let them go.
Let them, yeah. I think that might be, and I've never seen the UFO writers come up with that angle, because number one, most of them are what I call true believers, and they don't want to believe in anything but the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And I understand I'm demonizing myself right now with that group. I don't really care because I think their whole thing is stale. It's all stale anyway. Ufology right now, I think, is very stale.
It's stale enough that everybody's dropping out.
It's just more fantastic than what you're talking about. Although that's pretty fantastic to think.
It is and it isn't. It's more, I mean, you know, think about it. We seized all this technology. We know there were patents. Victor Schauberger was one, an American, T. Townsend Brown. There were patents in various patent offices around the world on anti-gravitational flying saucer spacecraft technology, and this stuff disappeared in the 30s, right before World War II, and has remained with a lid on it until people like David published these books, or people
like
Greg
talk about
it.
When you were right, Pat, did you ever see that book about electrogravitics? That famous
one? When I was an agent in Los Angeles,
in
the course of my duties, I attended a UFO convention, and...
Undercover?
San Diego.
Undercover?
Yes,
slightly, and and I obtained.
What, just to check up on what's going on there for the government?
No, what it was I was there for a counterintelligence issue. This had nothing to do with any Americans. Okay, any American citizens.
I know which one you were at.
And
was it at the Red Robin or it was on El Cajon Boulevard?
I don't recall.
Dude, so are you a narc?
No, I'm not a narc. I was a counterintelligence agent. Okay, going after foreign nationals who. Believe me, did not mean you any good, you or your freedoms, okay? I know that sounds cheesy, but I thought you'd enjoy that. Anyway,
I think I know which one that is. I think it was the one I interviewed.
But I did obtain a thing that was being sold, the electrogravitics paper, that has made its way around.
I didn't see it until about 3 years later.
Yeah.
The one with the two or three
pages.
Okay,
what is
pages?
This? Help me out. Yeah. What is this?
Electrogravitics, that was Townsend Brown's thing, right? Yeah, the paper on electrogravitics. It was an early...
I don't think there was an author name on it.
No, but Brown had... This was Brown's technology that he talked about originally
Navy.
It
was a book called Electrogravitics, and it described how sometime in the mid-1950s, anti-gravity had been achieved. But it didn't really get in. It got into it in detail, except in that one little area, like the development up to it and some of the stuff after it, what could be done with it. But when it got to that area and specifics and people and companies or whoever, it got very vague at that point.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who wrote it.
No, but if you study this guy, T. Townsend Brown, who's been written about since and was a scientist back then, he was involved in things, he's mentioned in the Philadelphia Experiment, you recognize things that Brown had been researching before this paper was written, you recognize these things that, if you know about Brown, you recognize Brown's contribution to this electric.
Did the U.S. government raid Tesla's hotel room when he died?
Yes, the Office of Naval Research.
Seriously?
Yes, they seriously did.
And like grabbed all the papers?
Yes.
They went to a storage space. Yeah. I think that he rented a storage space in New York, and they went there and cleared that thing out before.
And his apartment.
Because the Germans had offered him money to build something, right? Or
various entities did, but I'm not up enough on my Tesla right now to remember what the Germans offered.
I think he liked
him.
This country enough that he felt.
Oh yeah, he came over here from Croatia and I mean, as a young man. I mean, and he was here for years.
So, Walter, whoever you were working for sent you on assignment to this UFO convention to see what's up.
To see what was up
with
some specific issue that had nothing to do with an American citizen, other than American citizens being victimized by a foreign national.
Why did... how did you know it would be at this UFO convention? Why not at the underground bookstore in...
Because it was... clear, it was announced by name. I knew by name this person was going to be there.
Yeah, if there's a little paper making the rounds about anti-gravity, and somebody from Russia doesn't know enough about anti-gravity, or they have some piece, or it costs them a lot less to send somebody over here and get that silly paper from somebody that's going around
the
UFO circle.
Here's the deal. We got technology that's being developed out in the desert, right? Okay, now what I told you based on the theory that it's our technology and we want, you know, our good people to just think it's aliens, right? You get a group of UFO aficionados who want to go out to Area 51, and they're looking for flying saucers, they're looking for aliens, alien technology, right? Well, or anywhere, any of our bases, Air Force bases, right? They're looking for aliens and alien technology. Well, you get a foreign guy, a foreign national, someone who's not a citizen of this country and working on behalf of another country's intelligence service, who is a known or suspected enemy of ours, or who has a stake in stealing our technology, developed with your tax dollars for your defense. This individual ingratiates him or herself with our good, honest, sincere, well-meaning UFO aficionado citizens, and what we noticed was the good, well-meaning American citizens had their binoculars and telescopes and cameras aimed up to the sky, and here Mr. Foreign National Scientist, who we know is connected with intelligence services, has his camera and telescope aimed at our base, at our flight line. That is what we call in the counterintelligence world an indicator that this guy is collecting intelligence and he's using the UFO group, you know, as a platform to do that. And he's got them convinced that he, you know, hey, I'm interested in the truth about flying saucers and aliens. They believe this stuff, unfortunately. And yet the guy, what the guy's really wanting to do is collect on our defense systems through these well-meaning people. And they can be ignorant that this is going on. It's not that they're stupid. It's just that they're being used and manipulated. That's the kind of issue, as a counterintelligence agent, I was concerned about. Because I could see that this was, wow, there's a beautiful way to collect on... And that was my job. I was being paid to catch spies.
Did he have a book with a very funny title that was kind of stapled together, printed on very bad...
I don't want to go into who it was.
Really?
I'm not going to say what nationality they were, and I can get in trouble going into that if I reveal it, so...
I think I know who you were talking about.
But there's been several foreign nationals involved in, you know...
I still have a note he wrote.
And you know what? I got to be honest with you. You know, obviously you never saw anyone arrested or anything like that, so I'm not saying anyone was... A citizen of another nation.
That's just hanging out here. Like on a green card or...
Or a visa. You know, legitimately here.
Or a tourist or a...
But don't get me wrong. I'm not a xenophobe. I mean, I love travel, and I got to be honest with you.
What's
I spend
a xenophobe?
Fear of strangers. Someone who's got a really serious fear of strangers and outsiders and foreigners. I spend about 9 or 10 months of the year out of the country. I love travel. I love going to other parts of the world. I was just for 3 weeks in South America, and even I'm griping about the group of Americans at the table next to me in my hotel being typical friggin' Americans with their little U.S. flag symbol shirts on for the organization they're with. They got their girlfriend on their knee. They're talking loudly to their wife. Yes, honey, I'm going to bed early, and I don't care what you do in your bedroom. I don't care if you cheat on your wife, but what I'm saying is, there you are, being a high-profile, annoying American. I'm going to come down here, be loud, be obnoxious, have my American flag, screw your women, you know, and openly, you know, from a security standpoint, you're setting yourself up for compromise if somebody wants to fuck with you and you're married and blah, blah, blah. But my point is...
You mean get robbed.
The ugly...
Set yourself up for compromise.
Robbed
what
or... Well, for instance, what if you work for the government in a capacity where you have, like, a clearance and access?
Okay.
You know, you're setting yourself up. Oh, would wifey like to know about your girlfriend? Oh, my God, no. It will ruin your life? Oh, no, please don't do that. Then do this for us. And that is how spies are born sometimes, the real dumb ones. But anyway, I was trying to make a point about the ugly American. So I'm not a xenophobe, just that in my job, foreign agents who mean us harm quite often are foreign nationals, and that's why I use the phrase.
Anyway,
I just bore the hell out of everybody. I'm sorry.
No,
my ex-wife says that I used to. Well, you know how to end conversations, so I admit it.
No, I knew this was going on out at Area 51.
Yeah,
there were Japanese news crews out there quite a lot, and
the Japanese groups there genuinely interested in the UFO situation. Yeah,
some of the naval intelligence people,
and the one Russian guy
that
you know used to go to the conventions and stuff, he's genuinely interested in the UFO stuff. Uh-huh. These are people that you know you probably might not have
Vladimir Kurzinski or whatever his name was.
He's one of the Russian guys that's interested in UFOs, you know, legitimately and stuff. So yeah, no, these would be
a perfect
like
cover though,
because
he's annoying as hell.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. You know, that's actually not to go off on a digression, but that's actually the one place I saw. What's his name? The guy who was shot by the sheriff deputies. The guy that wrote on a pale horse.
Cooper.
That's where I saw the first time I ever saw Cooper speak publicly, and I thought, wow. There's a dynamic, for better or worse, kind of guy here. You know, and then that was the same place I saw one of the guys who was part of that intel unit that was doing the weird psychic stuff that thought they saw the end of the world, and they went AWOL, and none of them got in trouble. Do you remember that? That was
the
Gulf Breeze 6.
The
one
guys
of them
that were
was
stationed
speaking
in Germany.
There. One of them. One of those individuals was speaking there.
You know, a lot of weird shit goes on in Germany in regards to counterintelligence. Probably not as much now because East Germany's down, but a lot of UFO-related stuff went on in Germany. Yeah. Richard Doty was sent back not for a UFO thing, but for consorting with foreign nationals he was trying to get in on some counter-intel thing. And they said, whoa, we don't know who these people are. But, and there was also some scandal in East Germany in the mid to late 80s having to do with a UFO project or a UFO cover or something like that. There was probably lots of them, but that's one I heard of. I'm sorry I'm being
And then there's the Belgium thing. The Belgian
thing, the
triangular thing with the light in the middle, you know, those things. Yeah.
Did anybody ever find out what was going on with that?
I don't know.
From your point of view, because I don't think you were in the service at that point, were you? No, yeah, you were.
What year was that? Yeah, because there were reports of that when I was in Saudi Arabia in 96.
Yeah.
You know,
all right, I mean, you two obviously know more about UFO culture than I do, so is all of this...
Sorry, Ralph, I'm glad you're here, Ralph, because otherwise people are going, what the...
Is all of this, you know... Do UFOs exist or not? Or is it all just a convenient cover?
Yes, UFOs most definitely exist. But what they are is what the debate is.
Okay. They're not from outer space.
Some of them are. Sure.
From cultures, from some... From
other planets, yeah.
Possibly.
I believe that.
Think?
What do you believe, Greg?
Same thing. I think probably half or more of them are things that... Even if they remain unidentified as something that eventually somebody could identify as being something from here, I'm fairly convinced of that. I'm also fairly convinced that there's some other intelligence that manipulates our awareness of it for their own ends, whether it be a psychic intelligence, a physical presence on this planet.
Or people that want to hide.
Yeah, somebody or some race or some thing... It could all be just, you know, some mix between mental and physical going on where there is something, I'm convinced there's something outside of the consciousness of somebody who's being abducted or is being, you know,
some people say
visited nightly or whatever. I think that's what flipped out, I don't think that's what flipped out Joe, who is that rich.com guy, Joe Firmage. Actually, what I think happened to him is some people were looking for money from somewhere, and I think they ran something on him to make him think he'd had a religious or alien experience, because he only had it once, I believe.
What was this experience, just in a nutshell?
I think something came into his room at night. He's a Mormon, too, so I think it hooked in with his Mormon philosophy.
Yeah, because Joseph Smith was visited.
Yeah, whatever came into his head, he projected as being... a alien extraterrestrial or angelic intelligence that told him to do something. And right after that, he quit they pushed him out because he started talking about it a lot. Yeah. And the board of directors at U.S. West or whatever it was called, or whatever, it was a very large internet company, pushed him out off the board. And they bought him out for millions and millions of dollars. And he dumped millions of dollars into paranormal and UFO research right after that. Robert Bigelow has done that too, but... And his family apparently has had the Bigelow T family.
Oh, that okay.
It's the same Bigelow. He owns a lot of Las Vegas real estate, and he has been dumping a bunch of money into the paranormal. He supports National Institute for Discovery Science and the Society for Scientific Exploration. These are credentialed PhD level research scientists that are looking into paranormal.
But when I see like Whitney Strieber write Communion, which I guess I haven't read it, but that's about his experience with abduction or
and the Rockefeller. One of the Rockefellers gives a ton of money to that too.
That's just suspicious to me. I mean, there's a creative individual, you know.
Well, you've got the whole UFO abduction thing, and that's what I'm talking about. To me, the whole New Age thing, you know, and that a lot of that is embraced in the New Age and stuff. Like it's
the way
in modern
presents
ufology
it, though, is not in a New Age way. He's trying to come to grips with, I think, something that genuinely happened to him.
Sure,
and he's got a few different ways of looking at it. And I think he comes from a Western occult type thing. He's heavily into Gurdjieff Foundation, and that's his model. But I think, honestly, something weird happened to him, and he is trying to deal with it in these books.
And I can respect that because I think we've all had... I mean, have you ever had what you'd call an epiphanic or an enlightenment, really? Oh,
you mean
a very weird experience, a life-changing, altering experience. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, but it wasn't really that legal.
I haven't.
I have.
And one now, time
you would
I
expect had, me to say that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. One time I had a Satori experience whereby nothing, I stopped assigning, it was an exercise that Alan Watson talked about, stop assigning meaning to all your senses. It's mm-hmm. best when it's quiet at night. So like people go to the top of mountains and in forests and caves.
Yeah.
But you stop assigning meaning to everything. If you hear a bird,
it doesn't. You know.
Think about it for a while till it's not a bird anymore, it's just a sound. The air in the room, everything. Till you don't. And I got to the point where I stopped assigning meaning to everything around me.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I was flooded with this, I don't know what it was, but it was like somebody had just either put me in a high-speed elevator or dropped me out of an airplane. I just went,
That's interesting.
I had it for a split second, and as soon as I gave into the wonder, it was gone. And that's happened twice.
When it happened the first time?
It took me about half an hour, 45 minutes to get to that state. I mean, I willfully did it.
Yeah.
But what did you say?
When it happened the first time.
That's what happened the first time. The second time, the same
thing. Was it willful the first time?
Yes.
Obviously, because you quit assigning
meaning. And the second time was willful, too.
Well, what happened to you, Walter? You saw something? You saw a light?
No, quite frankly, I divide my life up into two parts. Before this event and after this event, it happened.
When you were 16?
Yeah, December. Did we talk about this last time?
No, you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
79.
December of 79. I quite literally woke up one day. And as soon as I opened my eyes, I looked at my hands, and I'm looking at my hands closely, and the first thought I had was, these are not my hands. And I remember walking through the house, and I saw my mom standing at the stove, and my thought was, okay, she's mother, but she's not my mother. And I remember thinking, these people are not my family. And I remember later that night, you know, so it was almost comical. Like, remember Bird on Soap when he thought he was invisible?
Yeah.
It was like, I'm sitting in the room and I'm going, wow, this is wild. And, you know, I've never done recreational drugs in my life. And little things like, you know, I was one of those kids where, you know, I was a bit edgy in the dark. I could then, that day, that night, before I'm the kind that a dark room, I would turn the light on before entering. Then I would walk into a dark room and then turn the light on. That was a small, subtle change. Another thing was I began to have my more psychic, what I would call psychic, and other strange experiences. Though it all seemed to start in my life after that event. A year later, I had an extremely vivid dream, which parts of it over the last 22 years, for lack of a better way of putting it, have come true.
Okay, I take that back. Well, I grew up in Virginia, Manassas, and that's huge,
right?
Civil War.
Right.
One time I was babysitting these kids, and I must have been, I don't know, 16 or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and I was walking upstairs.
16 again.
Yeah, and I saw what looked like two Civil War soldiers run by, and it sounds hokey, but it was just like Scooby-Doo. Like, they were that shade of white.
Wow.
They were a ghost. And I was so freaked out that I got the kids, and you know what I mean. I seriously thought I saw it, but you know.
How were you about those things? How were you predisposed to those things? Your interest level or your belief level or whatever before you had that experience?
You know, I'm like
the average kid, right?
I'm like Greg. You know, it's like I like ghosts. I like UFOs.
Yeah,
like
all kids.
That subject matter.
You like it, but that was like the first time you're like, whoa, right?
I seriously thought it was real.
And have you experienced anything like that since then? Yeah, like I've not had this experience I'm telling you, you know, that was 22 years ago, but the way I look at it is, I am not the same guy who went to bed the night before. I am a different guy, and I've heard various explanations for what it could be, some really wilder than others.
What do you think it is
about? Ooh, I've been trying to figure that one out for years. Right now, I think one of two things, either something was clicked on, a consciousness, I was purposely open to another consciousness level. Or are you familiar with the concept of the walk-in? I don't know if I want to talk about this. The walk-in is, for instance, this is one simple way to explain it. You have a body, and I believe everybody has a soul. Okay, I believe spiritually and things like that. and say, for instance, this body, this soul has achieved everything it feels it has needed to in this lifetime, so it decides it's time to check out. The usual process is the body dies or gets killed in some way or another. But if that body is useful to someone else or for another soul, this concept I'm talking about, the first soul born in that body can leave, vacate it, and another soul fill it so that it's a different consciousness. And the life, the years, the memories of that body from the time it was born up to the point that the soul switch was made can actually be reviewed like we would a computer file. So therefore, you know, I could go back before this event, and that to me, the memories are more like pictures in an album, whereas the memories since that event are much more dimensional. So I think it's possible to get really wild, you know, spiritual, psychological here, or philosophical, that it's a walk-in issue, or something was turned on in my mind and soul.
So was this
that I would need
very soon after or before your mentor started talking?
This happened 9 months after the first visit.
If it had happened before,
mm-hmm.
Well, actually, it raises just as many questions if it happens
either
before,
way. Right? Sure, yeah. Yeah, and then after that, I mean, to tell you the whole story of all the weird things that ever happened to me is, like I said, another story. I could either, you know, write it down for you, or we could talk about it on another night. But,
yeah.
I mean, after that, all
there
the weird things.
A lot of bars
things,
open still.
Yeah.
You know, Walter, with all due respect, I mean...
Sounds like bullshit.
You know, your mentor, I mean, was he... Did he want something from you? You know what I'm saying?
No. You mean...
I'm just saying, you know, he's listening to you. I don't know. I don't know. What...
I think, on one hand, you know, he wanted some type of, you know...
How did it behoove,
continuity, maybe?
How did it behoove him to turn you on to this stuff?
He told me that between me and my sisters, I was the only one that had it, the gifts. He said that...
Did he specify what these gifts
were? Basically, these were things in the psychic potential. Okay.
He assessed this after talking.
In 1986,
probably
he
to
took
your parents.
He's my uncle. He's my mother's brother, and this stuff runs through genetics and bloodline. Okay, 1986, he took me out to his van, and not to show me cartoons or anything. And he pulled a bundle out from underneath the seat, and he handed me, you know, he handed me this heavy object wrapped in a rag, and had me unwrap it, and as I'm unwrapping it, he told me, he says, you know, see that hill up there at the foot of the mountains? I'm like, yeah. He goes, one of these days you'll be taught to throw your consciousness on top of that hill, and yet you'll be standing down here in this valley, but your mind and your consciousness will be up there, and you'll be able to look around and tell someone else exactly what it is you're seeing up there at that moment in time. Now, this was in 1986. 10 years later, I'm in Saudi Arabia. I've already done my FBI time on I'm an OSI agent, and I see my first book on remote viewing, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, holy crap. You know, this was the first expose on remote viewing written right after Out There. The first time I actually read about it, honestly, was Out There, actually, was in 1992.
Because Out There was dealing with events in the late 80s.
Yes. Well, in 86, I believe I was told about remote viewing at that time before I ever saw anything really written about it, isn't it? But before I ever saw anything written about it,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And what was in the bundle, of course, was a gun. And what was his comment? He said, he used to tease me and say, you know, you're a good boy, Walter, but unfortunately in this world we need men. That was his way of saying, you know, he comes from a different time, okay, a different era.
Why would he give you a gun?
That was in my future. It was his way of, you know, he was introducing me to something that's in my future. I carried one for years, occasionally doing my job now for personal defense. I mean, but he knew that I was not exposed to these things in childhood. I mean, I never went hunting, you know, and stuff like that. I grew up in the California suburbs and stuff like that. He was just showing me, you know, he was just introducing me to something.
How'd your parents feel about this?
Yeah, I still don't understand why he showed you a gun. What was he trying to prove there?
what I just told you is the best I know. He didn't specify, this is why I've handed you this. He just handed it to me.
I think it goes back to the time as a donut thing.
Maybe. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because another explanation I have come up with in my mind, possibly, for what happened to me. I told you I had the weird experience, the waking up experience. Like, whoa, wow, things are weird, this is different.
Yeah.
Then a year later, I had this dream, this incredibly vivid dream, that over the years, things have come true from that dream. I find myself in the places that were in that dream. Another possibility, which goes back to 2 hours ago when we started this conversation, time travel. What if... I'm just saying what if here. Help me out. If you think I'm crazy, tell me. But what if that guy who woke up in the body back in December of 1979, that was my future self being shot back into December of 1979, my body at 16, and that's why when I woke up, I was like, you know, looking at my hands and going, whoa, okay, I'm back.
Because you're in a state there possibly where you're adjusting.
I'm adjusting, and here's the weird thing, is since then, I've always been kind of an inward person. Here's another weird thing that, you know, we can laugh about, but maybe it's a sign. I've always been attracted to, for instance, older women. You know, I've always been attracted to different eras than the one I live in. I've never really fully related to most people. I'm a weirdo.
But if your future self comes back and inhabits your body...
Consciousness. Future consciousness, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you want to experience 17 or 18? Don't you miss some lives there? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I have re-experienced it. What I'm saying is your consciousness comes back to yourself at 16 years old, and you relive all those years for a purpose. You know, whatever that purpose may be, maybe you fuck up in the future and you got to come back and redo something. Or maybe somewhere along the way...
Maybe that person has fucked up the last time and they's like, okay, I got all these years now in this body. I'm not going to do that again. There's this shortcut, possibly.
You know, maybe the choices that I made to not do certain things were the choices I'd made to do them in the past, and they were disastrous. But then, of course, you always make new disasters.
But couldn't your mentor have shown you a passport? You know, because you traveled a lot. I mean, couldn't he have showed you, a suit? Did you wear a suit?
Can you imagine a more
dramatic, impactful thing to show you?
Yeah, a symbol to show somebody.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty strong symbol. You know,
a gun is power and responsibility.
There you go, and responsibility. I'm not a gun nut. I have no trouble carrying them professionally. You know, but, you know, it just... All I'm telling you is what happened. I mean, to analyze it, I don't know. I mean, there's certain things I'm trying to figure out. All I can tell you is what did happen and what happened after that. And, you know, it's for you to decide your conclusion. I mean, I can only try to come up with my own and explain it to myself. Yeah, I've had a very weird life since 1979, okay? Some very weird things. My son, for instance, I sensed that my relationship with his mother was not going to last, even though I gave it an honest try.
You have children.
I have a child, yeah, a 12-year-old son. But I knew from the moment of conception when I got her pregnant, I knew I was supposed to do that, and I knew it was right, because that child was supposed to come into this world. So there, I mean,
that sounds like something exactly out of Majestic.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Cause
and UFO abductees have talked about the same thing.
My son Austin was meant to be. I have absolutely, even all the aggravation his mother and I, you know, she caused me in our relationship, you know, we want to strangle each other. And we've been divorced now for 7 years.
Seems like you get along great with her.
No, we don't.
It's been 7 years.
Oh,
well, that's
it goes
because
up and
you
down.
Do not complain.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, she, you know, most of the angst is on her side. But I have no regrets at all. I was 26 years old. I was already divorced once. I was out there whoring around. And most guys at 26, oh my God, my girlfriend's pregnant, I'm going to have a kid, would be freaking out. I never suffered and never have a moment's hesitation or problem or regret that my son came along when he did. Because I believe he was meant to be. And maybe, and the reason I'm tying this in is, maybe I knew, let's say this time travel thing is true, and this is all a theory here, hypothetical, that we're talking about. If I knew in the future that I was going to have him, therefore I'm relaxed with, okay, his mom and I aren't going to work out, but here comes Austin, you know. And he's maybe that was the reason I came back. was to have this child with this woman. You know? I'm a believer in karma. I'm a believer in reincarnation.
You'd have to be with this history.
Yeah, I guess. And, you know, I don't know.
It's that thing where, like, people say, well, how can you believe that? It's this theory and experience thing. Because I talk to people like Carla Turner, if you knew who she was, the UFO researcher. People would say, I'd say, what do you say when people say you're full of shit, you don't know what's going on, you're
crazy? I don't really care.
She'd say, I don't care, I know what I'm doing, if there's somebody around here that I can communicate with, great, they don't want to if they want to throw rocks at me, leave me alone, I have no time for you. I know what I'm saying and I know that I'm right. Go ahead and make fun of me, I don't give a shit, I've got work to do.
When I tell you what's happened to me that I've experienced, like this experience, I truly don't care what anyone thinks, because I know what happened to me. I know how real it was. You know, they weren't there. And that's why I don't put other people's experiences down. You know, the ones that they can't explain, or that, you know, like you're seeing. I pretty much have no reason not to believe that you didn't see those ghosts. My God, look where you lived at the time you saw it. A lot of other people have seen activity there. I've walked around Manassas myself and get a really interesting vibe, particularly on that long wooden walkway that goes through the woods up to that one hill up there.
Stonehill.
Yeah, that's... Whew, I'm getting the goosebumps now thinking about it, because I've been there myself in recent years. I'm back in D.C. a couple of times a month. I spend a lot of time in D.C., Virginia, and I go to the borders at Manassas right there at the exit where you go up to the battlefield.
66, yeah. That's where that sniper took somebody out.
Yeah. But, I won't put down other people's experiences, you know, because, first of all, it's not polite. And second of all, I'd be the last guy in the world to put down someone else's, because...
And third of all, you might learn something.
Yeah, there you go. Might be a piece of the puzzle.
But you're writing about your experiences, right? And you're hoping to publish books?
No. Okay. I don't want to get famous off this
stuff. Well, then that shot that down. Trying to make a fucking buck.
No, hell no. Okay. I will not write about this stuff to make any money. I mean, I'll talk about this stuff for free if Greg wants to have me on, and I'll talk about it with, you know, certain people, but no, I'm not writing a book about this. I write adventure fiction, stuff like Jules Verne.
Radio.
H. Rider Haggard.
Yeah, I was wondering, show that's running currently, is this a pre-recorded show?
No, we're here live right now.
Oh, I see, very interesting. I just wanted to, you know, put my two cents in about the gentleman who's speaking about having this experience where he felt he was possibly, I don't know, taken over by some other consciousness. It may just be that the deeper part of his unconscious was becoming apparent to his conscious self, and it gave him a kind of otherworldly feeling.
Yeah,
you know?
there's a lot of different models for that. Walter was kind of pointing and nodding as you said that.
I think that's in what I said when something was unlocked. What
it
you
tends
said is
to be
very
something
accurate.
That, of course, is something that's is brought up in a lot of different mystical experiences, and certainly is explored, like in Sufism and in the Gnostic sect of Christianity.
Exactly.
Where
and
are you
Jung,
listening?
Jung was talking about that quite a bit too in this book I just read. But anyway, I don't know. I was just going to say that's also a possibility, besides thinking it's always some
but there's
still
alien
force.
Right, there's still we never ascribed it to an alien force. There's still the...
I don't claim ever to be an abductee. I don't think there's...
I was just drawing comparisons like for, you know, looking at the same experience different ways, and actually we're glad you called up and said that. But that it actually, where did that impetus come from, the subconsciousness to do that? Where does, you know, you can do the chicken and the egg back a few different steps.
Yes. Okay, well anyway, I just wanted to let you know I'm really enjoying your program. I'm glad it is live, too.
Where are you listening from?
I'm just down the street, actually. I live over on Rodney and Prospect.
Oh, well. Lucky you.
Yeah, I get your signal loud and clear. A long time ago, I thought this was a different broadcast, and I just started listening about 2 weeks ago, and I was amazed that there's all these varieties of shows going on.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Clear Channel has not invaded this space yet.
Thanks.
Exactly. My brother can hear you guys very well downtown, and downtown L.A., too.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Okay, anyway, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
He mentioned Gnostic stuff. I attended a Gnostic mass and participated in one of their communions when I right before I got out of the Air Force in Columbus, Ohio. It was really interesting. And now that, I've taken that experience and fictionalized it as part of a historical novel I'm doing, but...
Can you guys do me a favor and sum up what the caller said? What was his...
He said, couldn't that have just been your subconscious rising up to tell your conscious mind what it wanted to do? And then the way I answered him was, well, where did that subconscious impetus come from? I mean, you're chicken and egging it back. Where did that subconscious impulse come from? I mean, is it self-contained? He was saying it was self-contained, and there was no need to say, I had a previous life, or somebody had walked
in,
or
whatever. Well, and he has a good point, and let's bring back my mentor into this. Now, one of two things where he's concerned, either he triggered it himself, because if you recall, this incident happened about 9 months, a nine-month window after his arrival. And
nine months, that's good.
Nine is a very significant number.
Maybe that's why there's only nine issues of the excluded middle.
Oh,
did you stop? Did you stop, Greg?
I want to do one more, but it keeps getting subverted somehow.
Isn't that interesting?
What do you mean?
It stops at nine.
Yes. Okay. A sacred number. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Walt.
Or he was aware it was going to happen, and, you know, that's why he showed up when he did, too. You know, kind of his influence to guide me. The man, as you can guess, you know, is my mentor in a very spiritual and professional way, you know, mm-hmm. and has influenced my thinking and activities in my life ever since then. You know, he's the most significant individual in my life.
If only all of us could have somebody like that, at least in that way. You know, my father is that way too, but not with the spiritual side. His spiritual thing was very much... find something you want to do and do it to death and don't let anybody stop you because otherwise you'll be miserable. And we don't want miserable people. That kind of thing. The most valuable thing I ever learned, but it was done surreptitiously and sneakily, which is great. But, you know, somebody to take that like 10 steps further, 30 steps, you know, infinitely further, that's a very valuable thing. I mean, you're so lucky, and I think you, of course, you know.
Well, I do understand how, you know, fortunate I am in my life that, you know, this guy came in, and the way I see it is, wow, he saw something in me, he chose me, you know, out of, you know, everyone in my family and such and such.
Right.
You know, of course, maybe I was the only one dumb enough to believe all his bullshit, and you know, oh, here's a gullible one.
The only thing wrong is it made your life a lot more interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure if you don't feel too bad about that.
No, not at all. But the caller had a good point. I mean, it could very well be something like that, and you know.
Right. Okay. It is 10 o'clock, or it's a little bit after 10. Iron Tampon's here.
Thanks, Greg.
Yes, I want to thank my guest.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Yeah, Ralph, who asked questions I would have never have asked because I'm too far into the subject matter, and I'm so glad you came. And Walter Bosley, who is an occasional guest here and apparently a listener favorite. I mean, he's certainly a favorite of mine. And we'll have him on again when he gets back from wherever he's going to next.
Yeah, I'll be back in July from one of my trips. I don't know exactly where I'm going yet. But,
you never know where you're going till you go.
Yeah.
And listen every week, Kill Radio to Radio Mysterio. So here from 8 to 10 p.m. on Sundays. And we'll go out with a one I've played before, too, but I really like this song. This is Sky Men by Jeff Goddard. Let's see if we can. Here we go. See you next week. You know, I won't be here next week. See you in 2 weeks.
Where do you come from? when you're diving. And if you see this flashing light, you and your darling, don't be afraid and run away.